No, that was a really uncanny scenario for a lot of Canadians, and I'm sure I know I was one of them, because I was with you reading the Tavares tweets. Yeah. Well, you were reading them, and I just went right to the end. So I knew what the conclusion was. I read the last chapter without reading the rest of the book, because all I wanted to see was what teams he going to, and it turned out that he was going to the Maple Leafs. So you were going through the whole spiel,
I'm reading everything. I'm reading these tweets that love the island, love the Islanders.
Exactly. Great.
And Bobby Max is going to Toronto.
Toronto.
Yeah.
Well, we got a guy on the line here who knew about it before 1:05 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday.
Maybe not much more, but...
I don't know. We'll get to the bottom of that. Here's the GM of the Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas. How you doing, Kyle?
Hey, guys. How you doing today? Well.
Yeah, we're doing well. We're just kind of going back to Sunday, and the country and the hockey world found out that Tavares was coming here around 1 o'clock, and obviously there was a lot of anticipation, but he did it in a uniquely 2018 way. He posted these Twitter, or he posted a few tweets, and he made the announcement, and he said what he said about the Islanders. But at what point throughout the process were you aware that he had been committed to being a Maple Leaf?
Well, it's interesting, but I mean, even late Saturday night, we did not know, and then very, very late Saturday, we had no discussions with them whatsoever about contract or anything like that. And then late Saturday night, I had a call from John saying that he had made up his mind after the interview period and wanted to come to Toronto. And so we then obviously talked to Pat after it struck midnight and began to try to put everything together, which is not always simple. And we're lucky here to have Brandon Pridham and Lawrence Gilman, who have a lot of experience on that front. And they worked with Jim Nice and Pat Brisson at CAA to get it all set and done. And one of John's wishes was that he was able to announce it on Twitter, because it was a difficult decision for him, and he wanted to first off thank the fans with the Islanders and their organization. So we were very willing to concede that part of the negotiation in order to get him here. And obviously we're happy with how it played out for us.
You talked about the way everything worked out Saturday night. You're still waiting for a call. Eventually you said that Tavares called you personally, right?
Yes, that's right.
So in terms of the contract, though, Did you guys have an idea of the number? I mean, it's not like you were sitting there being like, we're thinking 3 years at $5.5 million here. Like, you must have had a pretty decent idea of what the ballpark was going to be.
Well, I think you hear from rumors of what's out there, and in this case, you hear about from other teams. Our strategy was that we did not want to talk about the contract or the numbers with them until after Saturday, because we felt that we needed to have John know that he wanted to be a Maple Leaf before we started, and come to Toronto before we started to have that actual discussion, and to get through that part of it, which is the big part. I wasn't worried that we would be able to make the contract work between our camp and John and Pat Brisson and Jim Nice at CAA. So the primary goal of us from the minute that we knew that we were going to be a part of the interview process with them was that we need to present to John who we were, what we had become over time with the Maple Leafs, and where we were going, and what his role could be in helping us get to where we all want us to get. And that was the way that we handled it. Those were the tactics that we used, and just kept it about hockey and who we are as a program, and knew that if he decided that this is where he wanted to be, that the contract part would not be overly difficult to work on.
Kyle, when you made your pitch to John, and by all accounts, he was very impressed by it. He told us yesterday that he was very impressed by it. We've heard also that you were fairly impressed by what he came back with. What was he asking you, and what did he want to know?
In all of these discussions, some of them have been higher profile than others, Gord. You know, he was very direct. He had a list of questions, and you could tell he was very, very prepared personally for the process. And in a lot of times, whether it's agent-driven or representative-driven or the player-driven, the agents are the ones that I've found usually ask the difficult questions, either in these types of meetings or over the phone. But John, which I was very, very impressed by, was driving the bus there, and you could tell that Pat and the group at CA had prepared him very well in terms of educating him on the teams and what their situations were. So John wanted to know everything about our team, and he had very specific questions about our roster, where we were going, how we were going to continue to try to improve it, what we did on the development side, you know, what our plan was to move it forward and keep the group together. And so he was very, very specific with his questions and very well prepared. And that was very impressive for me because it was the first time that we've ever been in one of those scenarios where the player has been the one that you could tell has been very meticulous in his preparation when meeting with teams.
With Kyle Dubas, GM of the Maple Leafs, the CAA group and Tavares, they gave all six teams upwards of 3 hours to make their pitch. And I think you guys got out of there in just over two. But it's almost like writing an essay. And once it's handed in, it's handed in. There's nothing you can do. And I can tell you from my own experience as a student, and I wasn't much of one, there'd be times I'd walk away and I'd be like, oh, I knew I should have done this.
Yeah.
Or I should have done that. Why didn't I write this? Why didn't I say that? How often did that pop into your mind after the Monday meeting? I should have done this, should have done that, or I forgot this, that, or the other.
Yeah, it was interesting because this, and I said this a few times, this was the first process where that I personally have been through since the interviewing for the Sault Ste. Marie GM job, where you walk out and you think you did well, you think you were well prepared, but you really didn't have a great feel for how the other side received it or how they interpreted it. And so it was the exact same feeling for me as the in 2011 when I went into the Sault to interview with the board of directors with the Greyhounds. And, you know, you go through the next 2 days where you really don't have any indication for how you did. You don't see any media reports. You don't really have a lot from them as they were going through their interviews with the other clubs involved to give you any indication for how you did or how it went over. So it gives you time. And we were, you know, Mike went back to Detroit, but Brendan and I stayed in L.A. For the next couple of days just in case we were called back by chance. And, you know, you go through everything again from top to bottom. We could have done this differently, that differently. We should have said this and that and not talked about this as much. But as it kind of went on and the week went on, I think we grew more and more confident that we at least made a good impression and that they would want to have some more discussion with us later in the week. So kind of puts that at ease, and you just sort of give up control to them, and they had earned that right. And I'm happy that it played out the way that it did.
So you guys went first, right?
Were you That's first? Correct. Yeah.
Did you think maybe that, you know, we got to go first, and then there's going to be five other things after us? Like you kind of think,
plant the seed first, get in there.
But by the time the last presentation comes, does he remember the first one?
I don't know, Gord. We went back and we didn't get to pick. We were just told, hey, you know, you're invited to the dance and you're going to be dancing first. So. We weren't going to try to finesse when we went, so they told us we were on Monday, and so we got prepared. We were prepared, and then we got everybody in and had some time, myself and Mike and Brendan, to go through the points we wanted to make to them and make sure that they understood clearly and address their questions about our program. And then you always kind of say, well, geez, maybe we should have went last and leave the last impression, but. We went first this time, and it's, again, going back to my experience in the Sault, I was also, my interview with them was first, and I had the same feeling after, not knowing one way or the other, so that seems to have worked so far, but the same thing came into our mind. Every time, you know, you'd see on Twitter another team rolling up, and you're worried, you know, geez, what could they have presented that was better than us, and you go through the whole range of emotions throughout the entire week, and it was... It was interesting, to say the least.
Didn't you guys wind up on the same flight as him coming home? Or Brendan did, didn't
I? I did not.
But Brendan did, didn't he?
I did not. I'm not 100% sure. I know that I was not on the same flight as John Holm.
That would have been a funny one, huh?
Yeah.
Just send him drinks.
Just stare at him the whole time. But then at the same time, you're thinking, I don't want to be that guy, because then maybe he'll pick another team with Kyle Dubas, GM of the Maple Leafs. How much of the hometown kid coming home narrative did you rely on with your pitch?
Not a whole lot, Brian. It was more where we were at as a program and how he would fit into it. You know, I think obviously the fact that it is home for him certainly would have played into John's mind, and clearly, as he explained on Sunday to the media. It did weigh on him in the end, and as he said in his tweet, not many people get to live out their childhood dream or something in that vein. And so, you know, he obviously grew up a Leaf fan, grew up playing his later years of minor hockey for the Marlies, and with he and his fiance's families here, I think that that weighs into it big time. And we didn't try to play on it too much. We more tried to say, here's who we are as a hockey program, and here's how we can help you, you know, reach your objectives in hockey. And you know, the hometown stuff, I think that's more of a personal part that we left for John and his family and their camp at CAA.
With Cal Dubas, GM of the Maple Leafs. So the business side of this is the salary cap and working it all out. And what comes with this contract is a big commitment, $11 million per year, over 7 years. You've got a bunch of RFAs coming up, big RFAs. William Nylander currently being one of those. We know Matthews and Marner right around the corner. How do you juggle this? How do you make this work? And how does it affect your cap strategy going forward?
Yeah, what I would say, Brian, is that there won't be much juggling, because before we even engaged in the process with John, we didn't think it would be fair to John to go in and have him come in and then in subsequent years have to lose those players that you're referring to. So we went through a very stringent process internally that where we went through it over and over and poured over it in every way that we possibly could, imagining every different scenario to ensure that regardless of different variables that may interject themselves into this process as it goes along, that we're going to be able to keep that core of our team together and while also remaining fairly flexible and be able to add players to it. So I don't think there'll be any juggling. That's part of what we felt we had to convey to them, is that, you know, our cap situation is very favorable to us to keep this thing rolling ahead while also being able to adapt to different needs that we may find as we get on down the path and reach subsequent season and off season. So we feel very good about that. We're going to be very patient with the RFAs that you're alluding to. Obviously, William's contract is up now, and we'll begin working with Louis Gross, his representative here in the coming weeks, to make sure he's set, and then we'll tackle the others that are eligible for extensions. But we have to, for me, it's my own decision that we've got to be patient with them and make sure that the players know what they're getting into as well and what our vision is for the team, so that they feel a part of that if they're going to be signing up for the long term with us.
So, I mean, obviously Nylander has to be signed before the start of the year. Would you take a run at getting Matthews and Marner done before the start of the year as well?
I think that we'll work with their representatives, Gordon, begin to, you know, at least open discussions, but there's no rush for mine, and that's my own decision to just be patient with them. They're going to, you know, they're all going to be a part of this program for a long time, and I think that we want them to be acutely aware of where we're going and what they're getting into, that so that they feel as much a part of it as they can. If they're going to sign for the vast majority of the primes of their careers to be Maple Leafs, that they know where we're going. And so we'll begin that process individually with each of them here as we get rolling. But there's no real rush or panic on my end to get those done by a certain date or time. It's patience and doing it when it's right for the players and for us. And so we'll begin that process, but we'll be very, very patient with it. So I wouldn't expect any imminent news on either of those fronts.
You know the way this market works and the way Leaf fans are. I mean, you land Tavares, people are ecstatic, and then the dust clears, and it's like, okay, what's coming next? What's the next move? And up front, you're loaded. You got a very good number one goalie, very good coach. The focus seems to be on the defensive side of things. We talk about it a lot on this show. I think, quite frankly, your defense probably gets maybe a little too criticized, quite frankly, but how would you assess your defensive structure and, you know, the six guys on the back end as of today and what the plan might be leading up to opening night?
Sure, Brian. I'm probably more bullish on our defense than others, and I get asked about it every time someone talks to me, so I'm aware that it's a cause for angst within our fan base and amongst the pundits, and that's fine. I understand that, and I understand why that people want to talk about it. But I've got a lot of faith in our defense, and I think, you know, this year with Nikita Zaitsev being healthy, Ron Hainsey going into his second year with the team, Travis Dermott ascending from the Marlies, and you know, obviously we've got Morgan and Jake here, so you know, I like our defense. I think the key for us is that we're continuing to make plays from the back end and can move the puck to our forwards. I think all of the guys have the ability to do that. And then we've got, and having spent every day with the Marlies for the last number of years, and particularly this year as the team went on the run that ultimately ended up with the team winning, you see what guys like Martin Marincin is capable of doing as he, you know, gained more and more confidence as the year went on, and Justin Hall, Callie Rosen, Andreas Borgman, and on and on at that level. So I'm excited by our D because I think the guys we have on the way make a lot of plays and can also defend very well. And we've got Igor Ozyganov coming in from Russia as well, and Connor Carrick back. So I like our D more than most, and I believe they all have the ability to make plays and just play on our own home and make plays in the offensive zone as well. And if we find during the year that we need to add to it, and it is something that can put over the top, we'll have the assets and the cap space to do that in season. So I don't worry about that as much as others, and I'm really confident in our D and DJ Smith coaching them and developing them. I'm excited to see them come in September.
Well, congrats on a very successful July so far, and we look forward to seeing what you guys have in store the next couple of months. 91 days away from opening night, so we look forward to it.
He's incorrigible.
Kyle. Yes, exactly. Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Gordon. Have a great day.
There's Kyle Dubas, the GM of the Maple Leafs. So he's like you said, more bullish on his defense than the average fan.
And I think most teams would be, right? Like, most teams would say about their team that they like it more than other people do.